TV. TV. TV.
Okay, TV.
A podcast of the television.
Back up from that.
Okay. Now I'm too much.
You're
all right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, so this is a show about television that is normally an exclusive for Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/linoleumknife. But we're sharing it with the world because we have a great guest and because it's Thanksgiving week and you probably need a little more diversion while you're maybe in a place where you'd rather not be.
Probably.
So I'm Alonzo Duraldi, you're Dave White, and joining us today is the multifaceted Sam Pancake.
Sam Welcome. Pancake. Oh, I get a round of applause. Thank you, gentlemen.
You have been a guest on this show 1.5 times. One time you were actually here.
Yeah.
With Rose Abdu.
Yes.
And y'all were talking about Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life, on which Rose was Gypsy the Mechanic, and on which you were a town...
Oh, she was also...
Berta.
Berta, the maid.
And on which you were the town gay whose name I cannot remember.
His name was Donald, I'm told.
Donald, okay. Yeah.
Well, the town out gay.
Right.
Yes.
Now, we're still waiting for Taylor to come around.
Right. The town needs a daddy bear, and they have always had one.
True.
With Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so then there was the halftime you were here.
Oh, so humiliating.
Where I'm here to humiliate you just a little bit. Where
in public, thanks,
Rose,
Dad.
Rose came back to talk about being Berta, because after the show was over, after we binged it that day after Thanksgiving, she said, "I want to come back on and talk about being Berta." I was like, "We want you to come back on." And
we actually rearranged the taping of that episode to accommodate Mr. Pancake's
because also we had done it before it aired, and so we came back to do like a
the
follow-up.
Spoilers, yeah.
Because people didn't know she was Birdie yet. Yeah,
correct. And so then,
oh my God, you guys, I'm so sorry.
By the way, I forgot to tell you this is a clean podcast.
Oh, okay.
I'll trim it. It's fine.
You got it.
We were like, "Where's Sam? What's happening? What's going on?" And she's like, "I don't know. I don't know where Sam is." Finally, you call. We get you. We put the phone to the microphone so that you can talk and so that we can scold you.
We did? I don't remember that part.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you're on that
I
episode.
I was still so bathed in humiliation. I just want to... The thing about me is this, is I'm extremely prompt. Even before I
you
got...
You were here on the dot today.
Yes.
Yes.
And normally I am.
And the other time as well.
Oh, when I sat outside my truck for a few minutes, too.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I am, even at my worst, in my drunkenness before I went to rehab, I was always what I would call drunctual, drunk but punctual. It's very much my superpower. And that was one of the, I'm not saying the few times in my life, but maybe one of the only times in the last 10 years that I did a flub like that, where I had written it down the wrong day, and you guys were doing Saturday,
right?
But because you'd normally do Sunday, which we are today, I had it in my head as Sunday, and
right.
That I slept right through it, and I beg your forgiveness.
Well, obviously, we've forgiven you because you're here now.
Yes, right.
Today's the day you atone.
Well, okay, I'll do whatever you want me to, obviously.
10 Hail Marys.
Also, when you, because we were working out the schedule for this between all of our schedules, and you're like, "We can do 9 a.m. Sunday." And I'm like, "Oh, it's a test and a trick." And I'm going to, yes, oh yeah, I'll be there 9 bloody a.m. Alonzo and Dave. I can do it on a Sunday. I'll show you.
We wouldn't normally be forcing a guest to show up this early in the morning.
But there's a lot going
there's
on.
There's a lot going on today.
Sure.
First of all, Sam is the host among his many credits.
Oh, my.
You've seen him on TV. You've loved his viral web shorts. But you've really got to check out Sam Pancake Presents the Monday Afternoon Movie.
Hang on. Before we talk about your little podcast.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Condescending.
I need to talk about... Has your episode of A Million Little Things aired yet?
My first one has.
There's more than one?
Yeah.
Do you have, like, you're recurring?
I'm recurring.
Oh,
yes.
Oh yeah. My God. Yeah. Does that mean I have to start watching this terrible show?
Oh, wow. I'm sitting right here. My friend created it. This is, I didn't realize it would get this punishing.
Wow. Yeah, we're in the first 5 minutes.
Oh, your friend created it?
That's why I'm on it. You think I just get jobs from talent?
I don't get jobs from your talent. Yeah.
No, he's been a DJ Nash created it, and he has put me in a lot of his stuff, and he's been really good
all
to
right.
me.
In defense of A Million Little Things, I've only watched the pilot.
Okay.
Where we learned that friendship is a
million little things. It's
not just one thing. It's a million little things. Well, ABC wanted their This
okay,
Is
so
Us.
So now I have to start watching it.
Yeah.
If you're going to be on it, I have to start watching it.
Well, I'm on it. I've shot two so far. I'm
it
going
has
back
to be
again.
Better in the long run than Godfriended.
I was
going to
say,
right?
Can we? If we, we'll watch this if we can stop watching Godfriended.
Okay,
we've been hate watching Godfriended.
Me still on?
Me. Oh, we got a full season pickup.
Is that my what's the one with Sweet Ritter with Jason Ritter? That's something else about God.
Oh no no
is
no,
a
that's that's like
Kevin help us, Kevin save us. Wasn't that was also about a God making someone's life better?
No, I thought Kevin Help Us was the Kevin James
okay.
sitcom where they killed his wife so they could bring back Leah Remini.
There's that. There's also the Jason.
No, that was Kevin Can Wait. Sorry,
Kevin Can Wait. But there's a Jason. Is it Kevin Saves the World or Can Kevin Save the World? It doesn't matter. My point is,
all right,
this is a TV podcast, and we don't know what any of these shows are.
With the vast universe, the galaxy of TV we have available now, I have learned to say on shows that I watch, don't like, I still want to work, so I have to be diplomatic.
Of course.
And I have found, and I'm on lots of, God bless, I'm on lots of shows, and you just have to say, it's not for me, it's not, it's, I just quote Dr. Frankenfurter, I didn't make it for you. I paraphrase Dr. Frankenfurter.
Look, we were just talking about my crippling addiction to Hallmark Christmas movies, so I'm in no position to judge anybody.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to jump ship from Godfriended Me.
To A Million Little
back
Things?
To A Million Little Things.
Okay.
Because I need...
Only for the Sam episode.
I have to watch you on television.
Does this help any? I really love all the people on it, and Romany Malco is one of my faves.
Oh, no, the cast is great.
Yeah.
The cast is great. I dig that guy from Psych. I can't remember
his
name.
He's great. James Rodet, yeah.
Are there recurring flashbacks with...
There have to be, right?
Well, the funny thing is this year, and I can say this because I'm also on Search Party. I'm Drew Drogi, our dear friend Drew Drogi, and I shot two episodes together.
Search Party is fantastic. And
it's one of the best shows ever.
And based on the stills alone of what you cats are wearing, I'm like, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But I said to... And I saw Ron up in Vancouver a couple weeks ago. We were working... And I've known Ron for like 15 years.
Right.
He's a great guy.
That's Ron Livingston.
Ron Livingston.
He's dropping.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Clink. I've been to his house. Whatever. But I'm in both the Ron Livingston is Dead shows. Ron Livingston's death sets off a series of
unfortunate events. It's the beginning of the pilot.
The pilot. And then at Search Party, he is, and I'm sorry for the spoiler, but it was 2 years ago, and it doesn't ruin anything. He is horribly murdered at the end of the first season of Search Party.
Oh, funny. Yep. That's right.
So, and Ron and I had a laugh about that, and he's also on Loudermilk, and he made a joke something like, if you show up on Loudermilk, somehow I know that my character is going to die really soon.
He's like Ted McGinley in reverse.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, getting
back to all of his current credits in podcast.
Before we're done, we'll get a full CV from you where people will know what the TiVo besides A Million Little Pieces.
Let's get back to the big money. My podcast is about 70s TV horror supernatural movies featuring a female lead.
That's where the action is. Yeah, so Sam Pancake presents the Monday afternoon movie, which thank you again for letting me be on it.
Thank you for being on it.
You taped the first season before it aired, so I think I got to be the first guest who'd actually heard the show.
Oh, that's right. You were. So you actually were.
That was exciting. But yeah, it is. I love the premise that you saw the first half of these movies and then had to go to bed, and then your mother would assure you she would tell you the ending and then never did.
Never did. She never would. And my friend Nina, who did a really good one, my friend Nina Millen, she said at one point, she was like, maybe your mother was just, you know, protecting you. She thought you'd be afraid. And I was like, nah, that wasn't my mother. She didn't care. She did not care.
Right.
She just wasn't paying attention.
But yeah, so we're all children of the 70s, and this was kind of the golden era of like scary movies on television, you know, and to varying degrees of how scary they are now, obviously. But there was at least an effort to like, we're really going to supernatural this up, and so you've got a full range of stuff to cover.
Yeah, well, it was post-Exorcist, around the same time as Exorcist, post-Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
It apparently was they were trying to compete with the drive-in movie thing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Last House on the Left, and doing their own version of that to keep people at home on Friday nights and watching the TV. And I remember, maybe y'all do too, is it's like they were terrifying as children. I mean, movies were.
They really were. They scared the hell out of me when I was a little kid. There was one that to this day creeps me out with Ted Bessel. From that girl.
Oh, Scream Pretty Peggy?
Yeah.
We did it.
Yeah,
did.
That's on the season one of his show.
I haven't heard that one yet, then.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've listened to like three of the episodes.
So. I've watched Scream Pretty Peggy maybe three or four times this year just because of that. Because I watched it with a couple other people. I did it with my friend Matt Cornwall. It's Bette Davis is... please watch it, people.
And then go listen to the episode of your show.
Yes.
Because it's a hoot. Now, can we talk about what's coming up? Because like I have some favorites that I'm...
Oh, yeah. It was just to start doing it earlier, but I've been working. The next episode, I'm doing a holiday episode with this movie called... Which I didn't see this as a kid because it was 72 and that was a little young for me to be even that conscious of the movies. It's called Home for the Holidays. It's not the Jodie Foster directed Holly Hunter flick with Anne Bancroft and Robert Downey Jr. It's with Eleanor Parker, Jessica Walters, Jill Hayworth from Cabaret, and Sally Field plays sisters.
Oh my.
Now, please note, gentle reader, gentle listener, that the year before Eleanor Parker played Sally Field's mother in a movie called Maybe I'll Come Home in the Spring, which I never saw also. As a kid, didn't see it, but was obsessed with that title, hearing it as a kid. And so we're doing that. And so all the daughters return home at Christmas to their father, Walter Brennan, who is with his new wife, Julie Harris. And one by one, people are being killed and murdered by this almost, it's pre, you know, the silhouette, every murderer has this, every screen franchise killer has the mask or the silhouette now.
Right.
And in that, even on the, I'm sure it's a new DVD cover thing. It's a raincoat and a shovel, I think it is. And that's what the killer kills with. And you always see the silhouette of the raincoat and the shovel.
And this is a Christmas time.
It's a Christmas movie.
How have I not seen this?
Alonzo Duralde, your job is to know this already.
You know what? Look, even once you write the book, there are still gaps that appear. So.
Well, there are.
Now I've called his podcast his little podcast because I'm going to start calling your book your little book.
Fine.
But there is a crystal clear copy up on YouTube.
Nice.
And I was trying to get someone who to be the guest on the with the movie on the podcast who has maybe some loose connection, even though like I did Haunts of the Very Rich with Alec Mappa, and then we realized during it that Michael Lembeck's in it, and Michael directed him in the movie Connie and Carla.
Right. Yes.
And
was Drake. Captain Cool of Captain Cool.
No, the Kongs, which was one of my sexual awakening
totally,
moments in the 70s. But I've become acquainted with Sam Greisman, who is Sally Field's son, and he's going to be the guest on it.
Oh, nice.
So hopefully, we're recording that next week, and hopefully we'll get some nuggets from if Sally remembers anything, because there was nothing about it in her book In Pieces that I've just read, her autobiography. Not a mention of Home for the Holidays.
And her son is a dish. She was trying to set him up with like what?
Adam Rippon.
That was
He's cute. Yeah. There's more than one reason I'm having it. I'm no dumb.
No, because I always when I get these things in emails about them, I forward them to you now. Like Bad Ronald is now on Blu-ray.
Yes, and we're doing Bad Ronald. So Bad Ronald in the second season. I need to get that Blu-ray because I wanted to do it in the first season because I did see all of that as a kid and I was obsessed with it. Mm. It's about. Why don't you tell us what it's about?
Ronald is a teenager who kills someone, and his mother hides him in the walls of the house.
Kim Hunter, yes.
Oh, that's right, Kim Hunter. Yeah. And then she dies?
She dies.
And the house gets sold to somebody else, but he doesn't know what's going on, so he's still in the walls, and the new people don't know that they have a murderer living in the walls, and, you know.
Which they used again as a...
premise?
A narrative trope in the film The Son. Did y'all see The Son?
I did not.
The one about the doll?
Yes. Oh, I thought it was The Boy.
The Boy, sorry.
And I thought that this is Bad Ronald. This is Bad Ronald.
It's Bad Ronald.
Spoiler alert.
It's, listen, nothing can spoil The Boy.
Nothing.
Even knowing what happens at the end does not spoil the pleasures of that film.
That's correct.
It is so stupid.
Yeah.
And... also so good.
So deeply satisfying in a weird way, yeah.
So were you like a super TV obsessive kid?
Here's my story. When I was little, we lived in the country in West Virginia, and we only got ABC.
Oh, wow.
So I was very obsessed with TV, and luckily we did get ABC because it was the golden time.
I would say that was the decade to get ABC.
Starting, sure. You know, when I started school, or we moved to this house outside of town in West Virginia in 70, 71. So it was Brady Bunch, Partridge Family, which went into Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days, and then Love Boat and Fantasy Island. So we had all the all those treasures.
The giants.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What you watch now, and they're just, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Where's the Charlie's Angels? You know, that, which was, that still is satisfying to watch in a weird
Three's
way.
Company.
Three's, I always disliked, strongly disliked. I don't like to use the word hate, but I hated Three's Company.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, why? I really did. Why?
Tell me.
It hit me at the same time where I was like, because I didn't like to read kids' books. I like to read, you know, like Judith Krantz like that, or Jacqueline Suzanne. Like, right. I was that little gay guy kid, deeply, obviously deeply in the closet.
Right.
Though anyone with any whisper of an idea of what gay was would have known, obviously. Obsessed with theater and musicals.
Honey, you're in a safe space.
Thank you, Daddy. So it just, like, I already disliked the thing of him pretending to put on this, like, faggy thing to... so he could live there.
Right.
I already, that didn't feel good to me as a little gay kid.
Right.
And it was so dumb. It was just so dumb.
It really was dumb.
I would scream at the TV, like, just tell her that he's in the bedroom. Like, yes. It was the most obvious.
Yeah.
And I liked things that were more like, and I loved Laverne and Shirley, and it wasn't, I mean, it was wacky and slapsticky, but it wasn't dumb.
Right.
You know?
I was mainly watching Three's Company for Mrs. Roper.
Penny Marshall that was made Laverne and Shirley into something a lot rougher than it should have been.
That's true, yes.
And I think that's why it was, you know, more fun to watch.
Yeah.
But I remember we're roughly the same age, all three of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And so...
29.
I'm the oldest, I think, of the bunch of us here. But I remember being a kid and watching Three's Company and thinking that it was the first time, looking back, I should say, it was the first time that I recognized... you know, idiotic contrivance in a sitcom.
Yes.
Because I would do the same thing. I'd be like, why don't they just say to Mrs. Roper that this is the thing that really is happening?
Yeah, it would solve everything.
Why doesn't...
Because it's Shakespearean.
What if the person hiding behind the couch...
just got up.
Like, nothing bad would really happen. Like, yeah. No, I know you.
And I had a lot of appetite for like bad, like Blansky's Beauties, all kinds of bad.
Yes,
things, right.
But for some reason,
every show that Nancy Walker or Stockard Channing ever
were involved in, yeah. But for some reason, Three's Company stuck in my craw in the world, and I wanted to move to all the shows set in L.A. Maybe we wanted to move to L.A., but then like I didn't want to go to Westwood where Three's Company was, and even hearing the song right now, that insipid, vapid song with those empty 70s voices.
Do you know who wrote that song?
Those guys we were talking about earlier?
No. Joe Raposo, who wrote a bunch of the Sesame Street music.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. Sorry, Joe.
I'm not saying you have to like it. I just, it's a fun fact.
It is a fun fact.
What if you just said it's not for you?
You know what, guys? It's not for me. It's just not for me. I didn't make him for you.
A million little Jack Trippers.
And you know, but speaking of Jason Ritter, I love Jason. He's a delight. And I've crossed paths with Mr. Ritter before he passed away, and he's also a delight, so I feel bad. But
oh, God. Apropos of nothing, great John Ritter performance that a lot of people have not seen in Peter Bogdanovich's screen version of Noises Off.
Oh, yeah.
He's a brilliant physical comic, and like his timing's great. And I think I hear he's also really good in Bogdanovich's They All Laughed, which I've still never seen.
I started it and then couldn't finish it.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if that was my mood that day or circumstances, but I remember like giving it a shot because Audrey Hepburn's in it.
Right, yeah.
You know?
People love it or hate it. That's been my experience. But there are people who love it, and I need to watch it one of these days.
Yeah, we should watch that.
So, but what we're here today to talk about, because we wanted to have you on to talk about a TV movie, but we weren't going to do a horror supernatural because that is your bailiwick.
But make this kind of a crossover episode.
For sure.
Two podcasts meeting.
Yes. LKTV X Sam Pancake presents the Monday afternoon.
MAM. That's my.
We are talking about the 1979 joint, Before and After. Dave, you want to recap the plot?
I would love to. Patty Duke is so fat.
How fat is she?
So fat that she's not actually fat at all. She just got hips. And her husband is
Bradford Dillman.
Such an a-hole that this bothers him, and he doesn't want to be with her anymore. Meanwhile, Patty's good friend, Conchata Farrell. Mm-hmm.
Fellow West Virginian like me.
Oh, love her.
Is saying, yeah, your body's fine. My body's fine. I'm big. Who cares? I get laid. Life's good.
Yeah.
No one tells me what to do. But Patty's other friend, Barbara Feldon,
Agent 99,
is real skinny. And constantly says all the things that people always say, which is like, no one will love you if you don't, if you're not skinny. I live in the real world.
They want the package.
Yeah, I live in the real world. I don't know what your friend Conchata Farrell is thinking about her own life. Conchata Farrell, meanwhile, is like, yeah, I live in the real world too. Plenty of dudes out here want all of this.
Yeah.
But Patty needs to lose weight because Patty wants to lose weight.
Yes.
She's also got the mother on her.
Oh, yes. Right.
She's always got Mary that. Murphy. Yeah.
She got that terrible, terrible monster of a mother.
Yeah, Rosemary Murphy, who is about like 4 degrees shy of being full-on Gladys Cooper in Now Voyager.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yep.
They have this whole weird, you know, psychological manipulation kind of relationship going. So Patty puts on, I think, the sweatsuit that Gwyneth Paltrow wore in Shallow Hal.
It's like,
no, only it, without the padding.
It's the kind that like Gomer Pyle would wear. It's like, yes, a plain,
yeah.
You know, that heather gray, like
athletic wear. Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah.
And she goes to, you know, an exercise class with all these skinny ladies in leotards.
With full shag carpeting on the floor. Oh, it wasn't a wooden floor like all other exercise. Because
that's what you want to sweat
ever.
Into.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it smells great.
She loses a lot of weight.
Well, first, remember,
she loses the weight, she's
really clumsy in the exercises. She's like, whoa.
Wacky.
We can get into that.
Okay, sorry.
I'm just giving you the basics.
Okay, okay.
As she begins to lose the weight, she meets this young George Michael lookalike named
Art Hindel, okay, from the David Cronenbergs.
From the Brood.
That's,
yes,
right. From the Brood.
Canadian gentleman.
Mm.
And he likes more cushion for the pushing. So he's into her as is. He should just go hang out with Conchata Farrell.
There you go. But she's married.
But she's married. Listen, they're all married.
They're all married.
True. It's the 70s.
Yeah, but Patty is...
People are daytime friends and nighttime lovers.
Patty is separated because Bradford Dillman has taken a hike.
Sure, whatever.
Which she finds out on his 40th birthday when she's thrown him a surprise party.
On a booze cruise.
They might be married, but not to each other.
There you go.
And where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, okay. So she teaches an art class for blind people. And he is in the class, and he pretends to be blind just because he's hot for her.
But he's actually like her boss, or like works at the school also, or something.
Just to check her out or see how she's doing.
She starts losing the weight. She starts having a thing with him.
We get a montage.
She gets rid of the husband. There's a montage. The kids are like, "Where do we live now? Who is our parent?" No one cares.
Yep.
She gets the weight off. The husband comes back and says, "You know, baby, I always did love you." She, like, beat it. Tells the mom to beat it. Tells the kids to beat it. She goes running off.
Tells the artist to beat it.
He
winds up being a prick.
Right.
And the husband's like, "Oh, what, you could lose the weight for him, but not for me?" And she's like, in full lonely lady, "I lost the weight for me!"
Yep.
And so, you know, naturally we get the weight loss montage complete with song.
Oh, hot now.
Yes, please, let's talk about this song.
I'm everything I've got now. Ba-da-dee-dee-dee-dee-boom, boom. Not sung by a person, but by kind of a chorus of ladies.
Yes, yeah, like they got done with the dog food commercial and they were like, okay, hot now, take 43, let's go. Yeah, this was written by Charles Gimbel, who's half of the songwriting team of Gimbel and Fox, who did like a crazy amount of 70s music. I think they did like the Puffin Stuff music.
Oh,
and
okay.
They did the Barbarella music. Like, some nutty credits, those kids. Look them up.
There's a certain kind of late 70s disco song.
Yeah.
That has been written explicitly for a sitcom or TV drama or television movie. It is not a record, a song that it will ever be on a record anywhere. No one's ever going to go buy this record. It's just a song, a disco song written for some kind of TV or film situation back then. And all of it sounds, every single one of these songs, The Love Boat had a couple of these as well.
Yeah.
Every single one of these songs sounds exactly the same. There's the Waka Chica guitar.
Yeah.
There's a kind of white people in the city sort of feel to it all. Like they heard Chic and thought, okay, right, let's do this, but
whiter,
with only white people in mind.
And speaking of white, we'll do some cocaine too, to try to get the spirit of it.
Now, it's always hideous. There's weird string sections going on. Like every signifier that you would think of happening in a disco song is there.
Yeah,
just not good.
Right.
Exactly. They just missed the mark.
Yeah.
Because this, like, is no. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just like, why does this like almost could be Disco Lady or Ring My Bell, but it's not. It's just like, and you realize what a well crafted disco song is really a treasure, because you could miss the mark so
easily.
You can
do it wrong, really,
as these songs do constantly, including Hot Now.
This is 1979. It's worth remembering that 1984 is when Miami Vice came on the air.
Okay.
And that was like the thing that blew everybody away about that show, was they would actually pay for songs you knew.
Oh, that's right, because they had the Eagles on it.
Like you would hear, like,
Phil Collins.
They would use these songs that were actually recognizable, because we were so used to these like crappy TV filler songs.
Yeah, the most general, vague, vapid. Yeah,
like the songs that, like, you know, when Opie Cunningham, not Opie Cunningham, Opie Taylor, well, you know, would go to a school dance when he, in the later years of the Andy Griffith Show, when he was in junior high, and they were just dancing this like generic kind of rockety rock song.
And also, you know, when, like, I watch a lot of Here's Lucy, don't ask. My Hulu pleasure is just like late 60s, early 70s Lucille Ball.
Is that the one with clown face. Lucy and Desi Jr.?
Yes, where Kim and Craig Carter, her children move in with her. But like whenever anyone's listening to the music too loud, turn that racket down. It's this weird like swing jazz music, like with like exactly, but they're like, but then they behave in the script as if it's like Black Sabbath, Steppenwolf, something like that. It's so good. It's music that with no lyrics and no one would ever listen to, that I it just makes me so angry.
The kids and their acid rock.
Right. Now, Patty Duke in this movie, they are so intent to like make her a swan that in her Ugly Duckling period, not only is she wearing like a sort of half-assed, literally fat suit with, you know, a lot of sort of flowy caftany kind of things. At one point she splits her pants at a party on playing charades, and
because she's
so fat. And Barbara Feldon, of course, has nothing but like crazy skinny clothes, so she winds up wearing the curtains.
It is, can I just tell y'all something? I guess I can, because that's why I'm here. This movie infuriated me. At the very beginning, when she...
Rightly so. Yes.
She's supposed to be fat. They have made no attempt. No attempt. She looks absolutely normal. So it's like a version of The Emperor Has No Clothes. We're like... She's walking around. Everyone's treating her like she's so fat. But
the Emperor has no
even,
cellulite.
Not, she has that one time where she is belted and she goes to his office, I think. Or she goes to some office. And she does have a little bit of hip on her. Because Patty Duke is like this teaspoon. This little teaspoon I'm holding up in front of me, ladies and gentlemen. Like, she's so skinny to begin with. And they've maybe put... I don't understand why they
thought.
And she's tiny, and she's Patty Duke. And as soon as I saw the long hair with the braids by the face and the heavy brow, I'm like,
the eyebrows.
The eyebrows. This is a makeover movie. Fine, fair enough. And as she slowly graduates through the different hairstyles and makeup, and by the end, she's like a knockout. It just made me. Who in 1978 watched? I didn't see this back in the day, I have to say. This was my first viewing, I think, when I watched it this week for y'all. And it made me. It just like. It made me feel like a crazy person, because maybe like it was like I'm clawing at the walls trying to catch onto something in this plot that makes sense, and it's infuriating.
I will give her this.
Gaslit. I felt gaslit.
Yes.
I will give her this. You know, consummate pro that she is.
Sure.
She does try to walk like she's heavier. Like, she moves her body. Like, she's moving her shoulders. She is moving as though she were a heavy person. But that's it.
Yeah, she's trying to act it as best she can. The schlumpy dumpiness of all. And that stupid Gomer Pyle sweatsuit. And, like, this thing where her husband makes her buy clothes too tight. That's why she splits her pants. She's... She's got to be the same number weight as Barbara Feldon, who's a little bit taller. She right. has to be. Barbara Feldon is so the I know it's the character and it's what men the patriarchy has done to that character, but Barbara Feldon, who normally we love as Agent 99, is so warm and sexy and just like a good, feels like a wonderful person. And if you haven't heard her on the Gilbert Gottfried podcast lately, listen to her. She's just like, she's everything to love about Barbara Feldon.
Right.
Still at it. But she's so obnoxious and just like, you know, this is the world we live in. I didn't make it up. You have to get skinny. Take more pills. Pills to wake up. Pills to go to sleep.
I say right. she's high strung and speedy, which I thought was at least that was an interesting performance choice because this is a woman who's starving and like on Dexys.
On Dexys. Full blown. Yeah. Full blown speed.
And it's so funny to hear people talking about pills in a movie with Patty Duke in it because this is like only about a decade or so after Valley of the Dolls.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, Patty, I think, and I've read, it's been a while, but I read Call Me Anna and A Brilliant Madness. And I think she probably struggled with bulimia, perhaps, maybe.
That sounds right, yes.
You know, lots of actresses and women in general obviously did in the 70s until always, sadly. But she, you know, I'm sure this pushed buttons for her. Mm. And I think she was, you know, she was raised by that manager couple
yes.
that took over and had a very sad sort of embattled childhood. And I'm sure that I'm sure her weight was a part of that.
Oh, you know? No doubt. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though she, again, was also very thin. But it's just like, so she does do her best. But I'm just curious in the meetings at the network, whose decision it was to make her not look remotely overweight at all. Right.
Yeah, like the thought that somehow that would turn off viewers or something. It's like, well, no, the whole point of this movie is that you have her, like, lose all this weight. And so, and here's the thing. The director is named Kim Friedman, and the writer is Hindy Brooks. I don't know if either of these or both of these are women.
And also the DP was a female name. Look at the DP, because I was like, well, this is made by women, I hope, I think.
Yeah, Brianne Murphy, true. That's so definitely a female DP. So I was like, this movie is so, on the one hand, it's really trying to pat itself on the back for being, like, it thinks it's a feminist film,
yes.
but boy, is it just like...
I gotta say, by the end of it, I was like, if they don't go in the right direction with this, I'm gonna get in a time machine and speak to Gimbel and Fox. It's not their fault. Whoever was it,
I don't
a CBS?
Know. Gimbel ABC. And Fox have a lot to answer for.
Well, that's true.
With this film.
But when she, at the end, she's like, I didn't lose it for him, I didn't lose it for you, I lost it for me. And then in the conversation she has with the mother,
yes.
it gets better by the end. It gets more an unmarried true. Woman. It gets more,
it's my turn. We totally both launched into It's My Turn.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, which was a Jill Clayburgh 1979-ish movie.
Yeah, 80 maybe.
80, which was
Michael Douglas.
Which was also an unmarried woman, basically.
Yes.
It's very similar.
This was that era of, like, women getting out of bad marriages and putting all of their belongings into a yellow convertible Volkswagen Beetle and then driving to San Francisco to start a new life.
There you go.
Yeah. There's so much going on here that is about the trickle down
patriarchy
of second wave feminism,
mm-hmm.
Where if you recall in the early 1970s, you had entire episodes of shows built around the subject of that women's lib.
Yes. Yeah.
There was an entire episode of the Brady Bunch about that, if you recall. And
the men versus the women.
And so
actually, they did that a few times. It was the whole like, who's a better driver, Greg or Marcia? Yeah.
They did it more than once, but they very specifically referenced the women's liberation movement in this episode of the Brady Bunch. Was perhaps the only time that show ever acted as though there was an outside world.
Yeah, they certainly never mentioned
That's
Vietnam.
Or Nixon or Watergate.
Right. Yeah. The outside of that house, there was no actual other world going on. And other than in this episode. But it was more than just that. It was like every other show on TV had their special episode about, well, I guess we have to start looking at ladies a little differently now.
Like, well, I mean, Maude, I think, was built entirely on that
Maude
premise.
Maude and Mary Tyler Moore were built around that premise. And so that was just part of their atmosphere.
Right.
But then this movie comes along in 1979, and you have now gotten to the point where the divorce statistics are skyrocketing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's getting divorced because women are finally saying to themselves, oh, wait, I could leave? Like, I could just go? I mean, my mom did it.
My mom should have done it, but didn't.
And television had been completely Norman Lear'd at this point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so,
all in the family.
This is the result of that. And the result of, you know, films like An Unmarried Woman at the movie theater, someone at the network saying, well, let's just do something like that here, only let's make it about her being real fat.
And then it's going to be more real, high concept.
Then she becomes real hot. And, we'll have a song.
But, and to the movie's credit, it does, like, they do send Barbara Feld into the hospital.
Yeah, she gets really sick. She goes into a coma.
Yeah, she goes into a coma from, like, this liquid. I remember when she mentions liquid protein, that, like, it made the hair in the back of my neck stand up, because I remember that being one of the things that people were terrified in the 70s. Like, it got the word got out, this liquid protein diet will kill you, you know. And Conchita Farrell is never, like, made to be, is never punished for being a bigger lady.
Or shamed, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And she was, I have to, even her, she had been bigger before, because I remember her in Hot L Baltimore.
Right.
Remember seeing that? Which also had, like, the one of the first gay characters on TV.
I remember seeing that. A show I was forbidden to watch and watched every episode.
Oh, I need to revisit that, because I can't remember exactly what happened. But anyway, there's so few famous people from West Virginia, and so she was the one, other than David Selby and Don Knotts. And so we were, I was obsessed with everything Conchita Farrell did, and I got to meet her later, but yeah, because so she looks really, yeah, she's really attractive in it. She's very, I wonder how she, I just keep as being an actor on sets a lot, I'm like, I wonder how she felt on the set being this woman who looks absolutely normal,
right?
Yeah, she's curvy, but she's not, she doesn't look like morbidly obese or anything,
right?
And to have Patty Duke in a like two centimeters of gauze fat suit on,
right,
being like, I'm a disgusting pig mess who needs to die, you know, just all of that. I wonder how those women felt about it. I mean, they're probably clocking in, doing their lines and clocking out, like, you know, and thinking about their own lives. But
well, and Farrell, I just want a quick shout out, 2 years earlier gave a great supporting performance in Network.
Oh, she's in Network?
Yeah, remember she has that scene where she's reading off the premises of the shows to Faye Dunaway, and it's always like the young lawyers,
oh,
and the,
right,
you know, the characters include a crusty but lovable former Supreme Court justice.
Oh, my, yes, yeah, right.
I think that when you are specifically a fat actor, it's very much like being a fat person in the world. You just get used to, and you just kind of step on through other people's ideas about who you are, why you are that way, what they think you should be.
Yeah.
And if very specifically, if you're an actor, you have to just sort of suck it up and deal with the thing that's written on the page because you want to work.
Absolutely. Well, yes, it's like me with the gay stuff. I absolutely understand.
Right, exactly. Yeah, same deal.
Yeah.
To be as a gay person who is also fat.
Do you get the auditions for the officious assistant?
Back to a million little things. I thought I had aged out of the sassy gay assistant, but I'm back in the game. magical homo here to help the straight lady fix her life. It's not, I'm oversimplifying. He's more than that, but like that's the main thrust.
Gotcha.
No, it's there are, that we still live in a world where, you know, to be anything other than what, you know, a film like Before and After posits as worthy of love, you had better
look like Barbara Feldon.
You just you had better get used to being treated like garbage if you aren't, if you do not fit those.
Speaking of being treated like garbage, let's talk about the calorie counters meeting. This movie's version of Weight Watchers, which is, the meeting is run by Betty White, who is just Sue Ann Nivens mode.
Full Sue Ann. It needs to be lifted out and just become viral, because in calorie counters, it's like supposed to be Weight Watchers, obviously, and is it who takes her there? Barbara Feldon, because Conchita doesn't go to calorie counters.
No. Barbara Feldon. No.
Yeah, Conchita's too healthy.
Conchita's like, I can torture myself or something.
And yeah, exactly right. Yes, and Sue and Betty White in full Sue Ann Nivens mode is like perfectly like, hey everyone, welcome to calorie counters. Let's see who's been a piggy. And they read people's weight loss, but they don't read if you gained weight. She doesn't read the numbers, but you are forced to wear a pig mask.
Yes.
Yeah.
And everyone goes piggy, and there are actual, like, you know, 5 and under co-stars there who are of size, who I just, my heart breaks for them. And like, you've helped explain it to me, Dave, but like, they had to put on the mask and everyone calls them a piggy. Yeah. And thank God.
And I'm in a movie.
Exactly. And thank God, even the other heavy people, the fat people, and then Patty Duke, thank God, is so disgusted by it, she just gets up and leaves. It's really crazy.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
That's kind of a brilliant stroke now that I think about it, because I'm sure they don't do that at Weight Watchers or meetings like that.
I was going to say, people I know who've been have not reported back about the pig mask.
Don't they do weigh-ins?
But they do weigh-ins. But I mean, it probably feels like that to someone who is so ashamed or been made to feel ashamed or embarrassed about their weight, that putting their pig mask on is kind of like, you know, just symbolically it might feel like that.
Yeah, it's a strange scene.
It's really crazy.
I want to know where they got all those pig masks for.
Is
Calorie Counters Anonymous is the name of them.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Is Calorie Counters Anonymous Inc. manufacture pig masks?
Because they had a lot of them on hand.
Yeah, they had more than a few. And
maybe every Halloween she stocks up at Party City. I don't know.
And she comes out and Art Handel's in the mask just to fuck with her. He got it in her car or whatever, which was weird. How to get in the car. And it's creepy.
It's funny. Usually with a female-centric project, the male leads tend to be kind of bland, either because they don't want to cast somebody too dynamic or because men don't want to take what they know is going to be a secondary role.
Exactly,
this goes all the way back to like old Joan Crawford movies where you're like, ooh, French O'Toole. Tone and Zachary Scott. You
exactly.
Know.
They'll take it on the chin.
But this is a case where they cast two creeps, or like two guys who are good at playing creeps, because it's clear that like this is a love story between her and her.
Yeah, exactly. And like, let's go back to that. The art class for blind people.
Yes.
There was one woman, just like one of the only people of color in the entire movie, who's feeling up the Venus de Milo.
Right.
And then... it didn't make sense that somehow Art Handel has made a nude sketch of Patty Duke looking great, perfectly normal. She hates it because she looks so quote unquote fat. Mm. He's creeping on her. He's pretending to be blind. He falls for her so subtly and weirdly. And this isn't the actor's fault. It's the writing and everything. It's not because if he likes her because she's a curvy lady, she's not.
Yeah.
And he likes her because he really pursues her, and
he's still on board. He's still
why.
On board for skinny Patty too. Like I thought the twist was going to be that like she loses weight and his ardor cools, but
because that's a thing.
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As fat gays, I have seen so many dudes in the world of the bear.
Oh yeah,
lose weight, and then.
Their stock
their
drops.
boyfriend breaks up with them, or the dudes that were into them before are no longer into them, and because of social media they're not afraid of saying that to them directly on the internet.
Wow.
Oh, I liked you better when you were fatter.
Well, I have this is probably too much personal information, but I was in a season of Where the Bears Are, the bear web series, and gentlemen, I don't mind telling you, I like a bear. I'm not a bear, and I have a beard. And when I did the thing, the character that I play, I didn't have a beard at the time, but I was like, turns out, spoiler alert, it was like 5 years ago, that I kill bears because I want to be a bear, because the character can't gain weight, and he doesn't have any hair on his face, and he's mad. So I was around all these bears thinking like I was going to get a boyfriend or a date or even to get laid. Not interested. Not interested in me.
We call that phenomenon. Gummy bears.
What, what's that?
They stick together.
Oh, okay.
Bears are really into other bears.
They really are.
But they're
every single bear?
No.
They're not, that's the thing. Gummy bears is a type, but there are bears who are into other dudes.
Because I find lots of different things hot. Anyway, back to Patty Duke. Enough about my sex life.
We're hot now.
We will forward emails to Mr. Pancake if you have any serious inquiries only.
Yes. I want to go. Oh, but back to the art class. I couldn't tell what her position. She was an art teacher. It was just weird how suddenly Art Handel was into her, and this was like long hair braid. Good wig, though, but it was a fuzzy on the... I watched the YouTube on TV, and it was kind of fuzzy, but, like, and the heavy brow Patty, the dumpy Patty that he falls for, and I only know him from The Brood, so it was weird seeing the guy who's chased by devil children just suddenly, like, appear in this romantic role with Patty Duke, and then...
It's like when you go back and watch Marilyn Chambers' other movies.
Yes.
After watching Rabid.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Wow. But I keep rewinding to the beginning because I was just continually baffled and my jaw was dropping when they're at this swanky party and it's all Seattle. That must have been I think this was a high end.
Was it Seattle?
There were so many Seattle vistas. Yeah.
Oh, because there are parts that are, I thought were totally Long Beach, but maybe
they shot them there.
Oh, okay.
But it's supposed to be Seattle because there's a few scenes they have where the Space Needle is in it.
Oh, okay.
And they're at this.
Because when she's during the montage, she's jogging and she collapses in front of the theater that's showing Rocky II. I think that was the Vogue on Hollywood Boulevard.
It was.
But there's some things that are definitely, it's supposed to be Seattle.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I watched it. I can watch the YouTube on my big old TV. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why it showed up better. But like, clearly it goes back and forth. But
this movie's on YouTube, by the way.
Yes.
Guys.
That's where we saw it.
You want / don't want to go watch it on YouTube.
But in the swanky party they're at in the beginning, there's a weird, like,
indoor pool.
Indoor hot tub pool. And I noticed in the credits, one of the people in the pool is Jean Smart.
Yes.
Leader of Designing Women.
Yes.
And Patty's like, oh, I can't get in because I'll displace all the water. And I just didn't get it. I was like, why is she making, she's supposed to be fat. And as it slowly sank over me, my anger rose.
Well, and also, I'm glad you pointed out that line because they make her like the wisecracking fat lady.
Yeah,
and she's always got a one-liner for the situation.
I'll make the joke first.
Yeah. And, right. And she's really selling those lines.
Yeah, and it would be funny to have a sketch now, I think, of someone walking in like, I hope I don't break this chair, who like is an absolutely normal-sized person. It's like a bad Mad TV sketch.
Or a Mad TV sketch.
Oh, bingo. As an actor, I'm not allowed to say that if my other friends are on it, have been on it.
It just wasn't for me.
Yes, thank you.
They didn't make it for me. But it... But then she also, they go away from, or maybe, and I was in and out when I was watching it, before and after, in and out. She has a daughter who's a
Were
little heavy.
Eating in and out burger?
No. I'm a fat burger guy. I'm a fat burger shake.
Are you really?
Okay. Yeah, I've kind of turned on in and out a little bit.
Interesting.
I'm going to let you know that. I'm going to let you know
for those of you who are not eating gluten, in and out will wrap it in a lettuce for you. So.
And Shake Shack has a gluten-free bun, my friends, which made me very happy. I'm going later today.
Okie doke.
So she has a daughter who, you know, is heavy too and has kind of a problem with it.
Right.
And in the morning she's like, you ate a candy bar for breakfast. That's all. That would have been my dream. Yeah, that would have been a dream of mine as a child.
And I think in a smarter movie, they would have, you know, when Patty and the mother finally have their, like, confrontation, the mother, it talks about how much her mother had pressured her on stuff and how she didn't want to do that to Patty, but obviously did. So, you know, I think we're supposed to get from Patty and her daughter that maybe they're breaking the chain.
Exactly. Which I love that they have the mother-daughter talk, which could almost be in a feature film with a little bit of a rewrite, because it has more depth to it than most of those 70s TV movies had, you know? And it's Rosemary Murphy who was in everything, always playing the waspy mother who was never quite satisfied, but with a smile on her face and a teacup in her hand.
She's not going to have a better relationship with her little daughter because that kid disappears by the mid-movie.
That's true. Yeah, I'm running off with Art Hindle over the weekend.
Yeah, she runs
right?
off with him.
She goes off with him for a while. I'm like, well, who's minding your damn kids?
I think Rosemary Murphy is, and God knows what mind game she's playing on them.
Yeah,
you know?
Chain not being broken.
Because Dad already flew the coop. What box did you put your children into?
Did you remember the one scene where they go to lunch, Barbara and Conchata and Patty go to lunch, and there's just this, at first you think she's just a crazy lady walking around, like, but there's a model modeling clothes. She's like walking through the outdoor cafe in a red blouse and like a blonde side pony, kind of Chrissy Snow style. It's like walking around modeling clothes, but they don't mention that there are some, unless I missed it, it's some fashion show.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird thing.
It's hilarious.
Is that where everyone's having salad and Conchata's like, yeah, bring me a Reuben with a coffee with cream.
Right. Yeah.
She hits it with a cream. Yep. That's where it is.
Well, you know, back in the day, when you would go to a fancy department store and have your lunch there.
Oh, that's true. A fashion show would just break out at any moment.
Back in the day. I mean, like, mid-century.
Yeah.
You know, the 40s and 50s, where...
Ladies would take a luncheon at the bottle store.
Would walk around with wearing the clothes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and be like, oh, well, here, this is for sale in the blah, blah section. So that, you know.
Not for you, chunky stuff.
Some kind of weird holdover. But that's like a weird, it's an outdoor cafe.
Right.
Yeah. If that was maybe that's what they do in Seattle.
Southern California indoor outdoor living. You know.
Well, it's Seattle though. I'm telling you. Take another look.
Okay. So, final thoughts on before and after. You know, as somebody who is plus size myself.
My God.
I mean, I think I commend that the show's heart is in the right place, this movie. But boy, it's really awkwardly put together. And yeah, Patty Duke is just never fat. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah. That's the thing. I'm glad they get to the place they get to by the end, and she just does do it for herself because she ends up back with Bradford Dillman. I was going to be angry because for a hot second, it looks like that might happen. Mm-hmm. And when he's chasing her, you know, when she's chasing her, she's jogging, and he randomly is kind of jogging behind her, trying to stalk her
in dress shoes.
Yeah, in dress shoes.
And a leisure suit.
A leisure suit, literally. And she says, "Maybe I'll be with you if you can catch up." And she runs off in freeze frame, victory face. So thank God for that. But I just want to go back in time and have the network insist that she has some sort of a fat suit on. Or so. I know they didn't have the appliances yet, like they had by the time of Shallow Hal or Goldie Hawn and Death Becomes Her.
Right.
And all these other great, you know, heavy suits, fat suits they had, but it just would have been so much more effective if she actually had been fat, because I just picture women back in the day watching that thinking, like, if she's fat, I'm going to kill myself now. Goodbye.
Okay, so Dietland was canceled.
Yeah.
Yes, which sucks, because that was did you watch that show?
No.
So good.
Okay. Is there a television show, because we're talking about TV, is there a television show right now, or in the past 10 years, leading up to now, where there have been fat characters that nobody bothers?
Drop Dead Diva. What happened on that? Were they trying to make her skinny? I never saw it.
I never saw it either. But isn't that a thing where she gets hit in the head and thinks she's thin or something?
No.
Or am I thinking of I Feel Pretty?
I Feel Pretty. She thinks she's gorgeous and hot. After she falls off a SoulCycle bike,
right?
Written and directed by my landlord Mark Silverstein and his partner Abby Cohen. I have to put that in there, just to, full disclosure. Was at the premiere. Continue.
But I'm thinking about This Is Us, where I've seen a couple episodes of that, where the two
Chrissy Metz and
the dude,
the guy from the Nick,
they are trying to lose weight.
Well, they meet at calorie counters and all.
Okay, then it's automatically disqualified. Yeah. And so is a show like Mike and Molly, which is the same similar premise where they meet at a calorie blah blah Weight Watchers meeting. Anytime you have a fat person in a film or a TV program, somehow, somewhere, they all have to either go to a meeting like that or apologize in some way for who they are, what size they are, and I'm wondering when we're going to get one.
Are we counting the guy on It's Always Sunny?
that was stunt fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got insanely ripped.
Oh, my God.
Which
so
is
hot.
Also a stunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but, you know, props to him for committing to that bit every single time.
I wish I could remember what podcast it was, but somebody was talking recently about how we're allowed one famous fat person at a time. Like, it was Cameron Mannheim for a while, and, you know,
now it's Chrissy Metz, I guess.
Chrissy Metz and, I guess, Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
But it's like TV can handle, you get one.
Well, I remember I was on The Mick and with Carla Jimenez, and she is a woman of size, and there's never anything about her weight.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And it's funny, and all the comedy is about... I thought that show was hilarious, and not just because I was on it once, and I love all those people, but there was never anything about her weight, you know.
It's
just one thing I can randomly
think of. I'm trying to think of, one thing they've done that's funny with, one of the things that I loved in The Heat was the fact that Melissa McCarthy's character has, men who are dying to sleep with her again.
Right.
And she's can't be bothered, but everybody's treating her like this goddess that they, are obsessed with.
Okay, so, that counts then.
Yeah.
We don't disqualify that.
Yeah, but that's not TV.
But that's not TV, and TV is still where people go.
I was watching, again, trapped in a Canadian basic cable hotel room for 9 days and working a little bit. But, I started watching Mama Medium, and she's, a medium who is... She says the joke, but I know I'm an extra large, but I'm actually a medium. And her husband is pretty big, and her husband loves her the way she is, and she's a woman of size, and it's celebrated, and she doesn't... I mean, I don't know her personal private thoughts on it, but like, but that's reality TV.
I always think of that joke on 30 Rock when they come back from the summer when Jenna has been doing Mystic Pizza the musical on Broadway, and she had to eat all this pizza, and so she comes back heavier. And Jack,
me want food.
Jack Donaghy tells her that she has to lose 30 pounds or gain 60 because nobody in between has any place on television.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that one.
So that's what I want to know. Is that this is a TV movie that is 40 years old,
yeah,
almost at this point.
Yeah, Jesus.
And why?
Do you know who's a
big, do we still not have?
Do you know who's a groundbreaker in this regard?
Who?
Your dear friend Patrika Darbo.
Oh yeah,
on You're the right. soaps.
My dear friend. Yeah. She is my dear friend. We met one time.
But you know, yeah,
she cracked on me in public.
She was a soap diva who was like, you know, looked like the average soap viewer, and that was the idea, you know, that men were like falling all over themselves for her.
I had to go cover a premiere of a movie that she wasn't even in. But she showed up to the premiere. And because I was just there as a critic and alone, and I hate going to premieres because they're a nightmare. But I sat in the far back row on the aisle seat, like as far away from other human beings as I could possibly get.
I've seen this one lurking in the back of premieres before.
Yes.
And I had a book, and I was just sitting there reading my book, waiting for it to start, 90 minutes late, because they always do.
Oh, I know.
And she walked up and sat right in front of me, and we started talking, and I recognized her from various things, and that, you know. And she finally goes, "Who brings a book to a movie premiere?" And I go, "Me." She goes, "Give it to me and let me see what it is." I hand it to her, and we start talking about the book. She's like, "You're a weirdo bringing a book to a movie premiere." I was like, "Thank you."
She's a character, that one.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrika.
Well, the best part is when Dave said that he recognized her from a Tetley Tea commercial.
Was she really?
Yeah. She's the star of that Tetley Tea commercial. She was funny as hell in that
she's
Tetley
been working
Tea commercial.
Forever. I remember back in my casting days, she would come in, and she would, the thing about Patrika, if it was like, for some reason, this one sticks in my head, like, it was character actors when they would have them, which is how I met Conchita Farrell back in the day. But like, you know, if it was a witch or and this is commercials, it's very broad strokes. Everyone's an object. All people, I mean, are objects. And objects are objects.
Like objects are people, weirdly
a
enough.
A witch or, you know, a gypsy fortune teller or some other stereotype. Or like, you know, a fairy godmother like Patrika would go all out. I remember coming into this fairy godmother outfit one time that was like performance level at the Pantages. And like, because you didn't have to do that. Like a lot of actors didn't understand that, like, and I knew this from the SAG rules, being the casting person. Like, you don't have to do anything. They can't require you, the casting people, to dress up, but Patrika would go all out. This reminds me, I can't believe I didn't think of this till now. I'm in the movie Dumplin'.
It'll be on
Netflix. It premieres on December 7th on Netflix and in selected theaters. I shot it last year in Atlanta. I don't have a great big part, but it's all about a woman of size, Danielle McDonald, who's an amazing person and actress.
Is that from Patty Cakes?
She's Patty Cakes.
Oh, cool.
She's Australian. She can do a pitch-perfect Texas. It's set in Texas. Mm-hmm. We've shot in Atlanta. And she's perfectly fine with her size. Her mother, Jennifer Aniston, isn't, because she's a pageant lady. And so and part of the whole thing is like her nickname is Dumplin' and her real name is Willow Dean. And she's like, just stop calling me Dumplin'. Mm. And it's a big book it's a big YA novel by Julie Murphy.
Oh, okay.
And who came to set. Did Dolly Parton executive produce this or something?
Well, Dolly, I don't know if she's a producer per se, but she, in the book and as in the movie, which we shot as an independent film and it was acquired by Netflix, thankfully. Willa Dean is completely inspired by Dolly Parton, and her aunt, who has passed away before the movie, who's Jennifer's character's sister, is big. Mm-hmm. And she loved Dolly Parton, and so there's a lot of like quoting Dolly Parton and Dolly Parton songs. And then Dolly let them use her music for next to nothing, and now she's written a song for the movie that they're kind of pushing for an Oscar nomination.
Oh, cool.
So Dolly's really been on the path about it, which is great. And, but it's not to spoil anything, but like it's a book, it's out there. She does okay, and she doesn't have to change her body, and nowhere, and she's like, the mother's the one who has to change her beliefs about, like, you don't fit into a cookie cutter. And so it's like, I think it's pretty empowering, and young women love it. And
oh, cool.
So that's all good.
All right. So there's hope.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We're done.
What about the large dudes? What do we got?
They've got Where the Bears Are.
Yes, yeah. You're right.
There you go.
With Murderer Sam Pinkett.
And they've got all the... They've got... What are those other bear movies? The Bear Cities?
Bear City.
Bear City.
Yes.
The trilogy. Those.
That's what the bears have.
Mm-hmm. You're right. They're good.
Yeah. They
made by bears, funded by bears, for the bears, starring the bears.
I'll tell you something about that little microculture in the gay world. They are not having your fat shaming.
Indeed not.
Ever.
No.
And so that's, you know, for all their other problems. They got that one down.
That's good.
That's the one good thing. Yeah.
Sam Pancake, you're a delight. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Where can people see you? Where can they find you on the social medias? All the things.
I'm at the Sam Pancake on Instagram, and you can follow me on Facebook at Sam Pancake, and I am Twitter @JSamPancake, and I have Dumplin' coming out the first week of December. I have a smaller part in that. I'm continuing to be on A Million Little Things this season. Hopefully we'll get a second season. And I am on Search Party in season 3. And then I'm right now in between shooting a new guest star on a new sitcom called Abby's for NBC, which is mid-season.
Look at you living the dream.
It's been crazy. Honey, after like almost a year of time out from Hollywood.
Wow.
Yeah. Just hang in there, people. It was like I literally felt like I was on a timeout.
Now, is this a work beard or just a...
This is a Sam beard. Likes his face better with the beard on it.
It's working.
Thank you.
And now, of course, you're in the podcast is Sam Pancake Presents the Monday Afternoon Movie.
Yes. You can listen to all those on Table Cakes is the name of the network, but it's available wherever podcasts are sold for free.
And are you still doing your other show or no?
The Gas, Perona Hideous from The Gas, which is I do with my best friend, Gio Andy, who's also the drag queen, Roz Dress for Less, but we've just been too busy.
Mm.
And it also required booking a famous or semi-famous guest every week, which we did for a year and a half.
Wow.
Right? It's and cleaning my house to have them come over. We may come back. We had a sweet, nice little following, and we had a great time, but like we both have our own podcasts, different podcasts now.
Oh, gotcha.
Not in a competing weird, bad way, just in like we have our specific interest podcasts.
Competing weird and bad is actually the best way to go about it.
It's going to get
come on. We all know.
Yeah, that's it that I know for now. It's been a crazy time, yeah.
Well, this crossover episode between LKTV and...
Sam Pancake presents the Monday Afternoon Movie.
Yeah, I can never get the full title out of my mouth properly. Has been a great success.
Thank you.
If you have never...
You should go listen to him.
And if you've never heard LKTV before, you can get this show on the regular by becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/linoleumknife.
That's correct.
And you can also go to Patreon and support Table Cakes, which is the producer of Sam.
Also, I have a new web series that I filmed with one of my best friends, Nina Millen, called Proud of Us, that launches this week. I forgot. Proud of Us. It's a series of vignettes of me and Nina doing funny things, and look for that, and I'll splatter it all over my social media.
Excellent.
He's got a lot of projects.
Yes. Honey, you got to keep busy.
Yeah.
I don't have a pet or a partner, so I've got a...
But so many hyphens.
So many hyphens and a big crazy family to keep me entertained on the side. The pancakes.
All right, y'all. Thanks for listening. We'll be back later with more. So until then, goodbye.